At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. The nuclear arsenal, a letter to the president, characterized in the New York Times. Nearly 700 scientists and engineers, including 21 Nobel laureates, asked President Biden to use his forthcoming declaration of a new national strategy for managing nuclear weapons as a chance to cut the U.S. arsenal by a third and to declare for the first time that the United States would never be the first to use nuclear weapons in a conflict. This is David Sanger reporting in These Last Days. Gordon and I turn to our colleague, Peter Hussey, who has been our helpmate on understanding the nuclear arsenal, which, for my understanding over these last years, is due for an upgrade, an improvement. Peter can be found at the Hudson.org, phusey at Hudson.org. Peter, a very good evening to you. This is a surprise to me. You're very well informed. Are you surprised that this letter has been addressed to the president now? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gordon. Gordon, thank you. I'm not surprised because this has been a mantra narrative of the arms control group. And many of these same people proposed in 1980 that we adopt the Russian proposed nuclear freeze. So all it tells you is very smart people can often be mistaken. There's four really serious problems with the idea of what they're proposing. The first one is during the Cold War, we said we would reserve the right to use nuclear weapons to stop a Russian conventional attack through the Fulda Gap into Western Europe. By giving away that option, what you're doing is putting Chinese and Russian nuclear forces in a sanctuary free from attack. Number two, it tells you if the Russians or Chinese attack with an EMP or electromagnetic pulse or cyber or chem bio attack, which can kill literally hundreds of millions of Americans, they don't have to fear nuclear retaliation. Third, if the Russians and Chinese made a similar pledge, we will never use nukes first, would you believe them in a crisis? Of course you wouldn't. And what about North Korea? And also, finally, it gives Russia and China an incentive to use force, including nuclear weapons, first, because they know the United States will not. So it's a very foolish idea. And we can explore some of the other ideas, like cutting our forces by a third unilaterally and killing ICBMs, and if you would like to go through that. But this is a dumb idea.
Gordon, you have a question for Peter.
Peter, this is at a time where China is obviously building up its strategic nuclear forces. The Russians clearly have a large arsenal. It would seem that this would be the worst time to actually change our nuclear postures, largely because this is a time where there's so much fluidity that we really don't know the effect of what our policy changes would be, even if we were thinking we were making smart changes. What is your assessment?
I think you're exactly right. I went back and looked in 2010 when the New START Treaty was signed under Mr. Obama. Many of these same people said, kill half the submarines. Now they're saying kill all the ICBMs. What's the problem of going down to 1,000 warheads, even if the Chinese and Russians weren't building up? The problem is you know what a hedge is. Every single arms control deal the president of the United States has signed has had a provision to allow us to have a hedge. What's a hedge mean? What happens if arms control breaks down and the other guy builds up? You need to be able to build up. Guess what getting rid of the land-based ICBMs does? It eliminates your hedge. Instead of having 1,550 warheads, we would be able to have 1,536, and no more, because our submarines that are coming into the force, the Columbia, they only have 12 missiles, and each missile can only hold 8 warheads. So you basically effectively freeze us to where we are today. Now, will China have 1,000 warheads, which we now think they will, or 2,000? And Russia already has close to 2,000. Add those two together, you'd have a 4-to-1 advantage, Russia and China, over the United States. And I think warheads matter, particularly those that are ready to go and deployed. So the idea of unilaterally reducing to 1,000 warheads while you're facing adversaries which have roughly 3,000 to 4,000, China, of which is under no controls whatsoever, and 55% of Russia's forces are under no control either because they're short range or medium range, and I'm not even including those in the number. So, Gordon, this is the worst possible time to do this. Now, just parenthetically, I came across a document that's been unclassified. In 1986, Reagan had a meeting of his Security Council, and the same issue was, should the United States forego deploying the last two Trident submarines in order to, quote unquote, jumpstart arms control? And Reagan said, no, I'm not going to abide by the SALT Treaty. It was never signed. I'm going to push reductions, and I'm going to fully modernize as we are got Congress to approve. And guess what? That was 1986. The next year, you got the INF Treaty that banned all INF range missiles. And then a couple years later, you got START 1 that reduced warheads from 12 to 6,000. And then you got START 2 that reduced everything from 6,000 to 3,500. I think that's a pretty good record that shows unilateral restraint on the part of the United States doesn't work.
Peter, my understanding from speaking to John Bolton about this years ago is that the U.S. mission with our nuclear arsenal is not only about the U.S., but also about many of our allies. We provide a nuclear umbrella so that it's not necessary for other states to become nuclear powers. Is that still accurate, Peter?
Absolutely accurate. China recently said that if Japan came to the defense of Taiwan, they would rain nuclear weapons down on Japan until they unconditionally surrendered for the second time, which, of course, is a reference to World War II. And so then you have in Europe, Mr. Putin, according to our friend Mark Schneider, who's with the National Institute of Public Policy, he's counted the number of times that Putin has threatened the Western European countries with nuclear attack. And it's 30 since 2010. So they just did some exercises in which Putin himself, with a dramatic flourish, was actually launching nukes at the Baltics and Ukraine and other countries in the area. Again, these are exercises, but nonetheless, the Russians have been doing this more so than in any period up since the end of the Cold War. So these are the Mr. Putin, I think, is, I hope he's not as reckless as his rhetoric is. But on the other hand, you're exactly right. Our extended deterrent is unlike Japan and Russia. China and Russia do not have an extended deterrent because they don't have any friends. We, on the other hand, as you said, there are only 11 countries in the world, I think, that have nukes. And one of the miracles of our extended deterrent, all the countries of Europe, except for France and England that already have nukes, don't have to build nuclear weapons. And none of our Asian friends have to build nuclear weapons. Now, I'd rather they put a little bit more money in their conventional forces, because there we also spend a considerable amount, John. But you're exactly right. The extended deterrent is a counterproliferation, nonproliferation, strategic stability thing that works very well.
Gordon?
When Joe Biden was running for president, Peter, he was campaigning on a sole purpose platform. In other words, his view was that the sole purpose of the U.S. nuclear arsenal was to respond to an attack, a nuclear attack from another country. And clearly, this really looks like no first use in different language. Apparently, the president is now willing to accommodate some of the proposals that we have just heard that John described. What is your hearing in Washington about how the nuclear posture review is going to come out?
We have about a minute, Peter.
Okay, well, they did a survey of our European friends. Our European friends came back and said, no way will you adopt a no first use or sole use, because, John, you just went through it. The extended deterrent is critical to keep Russia at bay, and also China at bay in the Far East. So I think what you'll have is a lot of language about the need to lessen the importance of nuclear weapons and to push for global zero. But in terms of practical, real world, we will not see a diminution of the deterrent as called for by the New START or allowed by the New START Treaty. That's with my fingers crossed a little bit on that. But I think that's the case, Gordon. It doesn't mean that, as my friend General Klotz said recently, in Washington, nothing's ever settled. You can this year support the entire modernization, which they did in the defense bill. Next year, the same fights will come up about killing everything, and we'll approve the entire modernization effort. And the year after that, we'll go through it all over again.
Peter Husey, Gordon Chang, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.